banker for 21 years almost.
That's okay. It's going to fuel you. It's still, I think, fueling me to this day.
Somebody that's a little bit bored should be waiting a long time. So people are just going to have to roll up their sleeves.
Try to make sense of it because there's so much information coming in and you don't know what's relevant and what's not.
The corporate world, for 4 years as a CEO.
I'm not interested in having this small probability of losing a whole lot of money.
You need to be surrounded by other smart people.
Got me through the door because it's a pretty small group. And it's
Hi everyone, I'm your host Winhan, and this is the Finance Podcast, powered by the McGill Investment Club. On this platform, we explore the professional journeys of individuals who have successfully built careers in the financial industry. My guest today is Perna Matthews. Perna is the Vice President of ETF Product Strategy at McKenzie Investments, and he's a subject matter expert on exchange-traded funds. Throughout our conversation, she highlights the state of ETF markets in Canada and provides insight around the development of new investment products. As usual, the content in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice. Please enjoy my conversation with Perna Matthews. Perna, I think a good place for us to begin is, historically on this podcast, we haven't had many folks who've worked in the space of investment products and ETFs. So I'd love for you to describe in as much detail as you'd like what your job in your industry entails.
Sounds great. Yeah. I'm not surprised. I mean, ETFs are in some ways, they've been around for many, many, many years, 30 plus years now in Canada. But they've only seen such exponential growth over the past decade. It is actually the fastest growing investment product vehicle in Canada. The compounded annual growth rate in terms of flows and assets into ETFs are at 20% over the past decade. And that is expected to be for the next 5 years, closer to 12%, which is double any other type of product, mutual funds, alternative funds. So ETFs have grown significantly over the past decade. You've seen a lot of ETFs come to market. When I started in the ETF industry, there were only 10, 11 providers, ETF providers in the Canadian market. There's now over almost 50 actually in the Canadian market. So there's a lot of providers in the market, a lot of products, a lot more career opportunities today than there were a decade ago. So, so I'm happy to be here, talk about my space a little bit more because I feel like there's going to be a lot more job opportunities for young grads in the next few years in the ETF space, whether it's an ETF provider or an asset manager that has ETFs on their shelf. So to give you a little bit more background, when I first came out of school, this job that I have didn't actually exist. So I graduated 16 years ago, and there weren't, there were three ETF providers in the country, maybe two at the time, and really hardly any assets and ETFs then. And so, what you think you're going to be doing 16 years from now after you graduate might actually not even exist today. So just keep an open mind. And so the job I have today is a very unique one. I lead ETF product for McKenzie Investments. So our team thinks about our strategy and how we approach the kinds of ETFs we launch on our platform, our existing ETFs and whether they're meeting the needs of investors, and how our ETF shelf might need to continue to evolve. We think a lot about regulatory impact. We think a lot about global ETF trends. And so we spend a lot of time from a strategy perspective thinking about ETFs and the Canadian market and Canadian investors. We also spend a lot of time providing support on our existing ETFs. So helping our sales teams, the advisors that invest in our ETFs on behalf of their clients. We spend a lot of time providing them insights on the market, insights on our products. Sometimes it's very specific questions they might have. Sometimes it's more broader macro related questions that impact the solutions they invest in. So we provide a lot of ongoing support to our clients, to our advisors through for our ETF shelf. And then, like I said, we spent time thinking about shelf management. So, you know, we have today close to 50 ETFs on the the Mackenzie ETF shelf, and so that's a lot of products. Some of our competitors have over 150 ETFs, so certainly very large shelves out there. But you know, I think a good provider spends a lot of time thinking about, are we delivering the most appropriate solutions for clients, and how are their needs changing over time? I mean, we've seen some pretty interesting, you know, macroeconomic changes over the past decade. The last 3-4 years have been quite unique in terms of an investing environment. And so what do the next 3 or 4 years look like? And what kinds of solutions should we be providing investors to better manage their portfolios? So that's a lot of what fits under ETF product, in particular, what my team delivers. And like I said, there's going to be plenty of opportunities, I think, in ETFs in the next few years for those looking for an opportunity to enter the space.
There are lots of ideas to double tap into. But first, I'd love to ask how you think about product differentiation and positioning. I think it's a big part of strategy. You've mentioned large product shelves on the market. So can you speak about product positioning and differentiation broadly?
Sure. I think it's also important to first establish some differences in how advisors and investors tend to use ETFs versus other products like mutual funds. Historically, mutual funds have been really great vehicles to deliver holistic solutions. You know, because you've got an active manager typically running them, they tend to be more packaged solutions. They tend to deliver you more in one vehicle. ETFs can be that, but they can also be great tools for asset allocators looking for very specific strategies, potentially niche strategies, potentially specific duration. Maybe it's a specific market cap they're looking for. Maybe it's a specific geography. So ETFs, I think of as tools in a toolkit. You've just got, you could do your broad market S&P 500 like product, or you can get into, you know, sectors, or like I said, you can get into the large cap versus the small cap. You can go regional, you can go duration across different durations, across different risk credit profiles and fixed income. So you can be a lot more specific in how you are tailoring your portfolio or your clients' portfolios when you use ETFs. And so advisors, investors over the past decade have looked to the ETF market because there's so much choice and it's ever growing that you can really find just about anything you need today in the ETF market. And so that's a big differentiator, I'd say, just vehicle wise between what you typically find in the ETF market and what you typically find structured in mutual funds. And so when we think about the now 1400 plus ETFs that exist in the Canadian market, you know, different providers have different strategies, right? Some ETF providers are there just to provide broad index mandates. It's core from their perspective. All they want to do is provide broad core index mandates. You've then got some shops on the other, completely other end of that, right? Where they're very niche, they're very specialized in a particular segment of the market. It could be fixed income, it could be alternative investing, and that's what they do best. And that's all they deliver is solutions in those specific areas. And then you've got some providers that do a bit of everything on those two ends, but everything in between as well. And at Mackenzie, we pride ourselves in having a pretty holistic shelf. So we have everything from the broad-based index ETFs through to fundamentally active mandates that are very similar to what you could find in the mutual fund world. So, and everything else in between. It depends on what a provider's strategy is, right? So some providers will have a very basic or, you know, defined strategy. Some will be more holistic and have lots more products, different types of products on offer. So that also has an impact on the number of products you see from every provider in the marketplace. Some providers also are more aligned to being trendy or on trend with what investors are looking for now. So we saw a flurry, for example, of thematic ETFs over the past few years. Some marijuana was a good example of that, very specifically, where you had you know, at least one provider first in the country come out with a marijuana ETF. That provider loves, you know, innovation in terms of coming out with like what investors want today. You know, there's other providers that'll come out constantly with different themes and trends. And every few years, you'll see them close ETFs and launch ETFs because they're sort of trying to look ahead at what investors might want from a hot theme perspective. My approach is not that. I think that's quite, you know, it's quite risky for the average investor. And a lot of investors who are looking for that are probably, they're probably liking particular stocks. They probably already know the stocks they want to buy, the companies they want to buy. They're probably doing that on their own through your trade account, through your direct brokerage. And so, do I need to deliver you that in an ETF vehicle? I'm not sure. I'm not convinced about that. I'd rather look for opportunities that I think are going to have a little bit more longevity in clients' portfolios, that are going to be around for a little bit longer, that might not have a boom and an immediate bust as we've seen with many products. And so, you know, at Mackenzie, we tend to stay away from those kinds of solutions. So you typically won't see us engage in that way. But you see, like I said, different providers, different strategies take a different approach to the market in terms of how they grow their business, how they offer products to the market. And for us, it's let's keep to what we feel are going to be longer standing investment themes in clients' portfolios and not just hot for today, gone for tomorrow.
Yeah, totally. I've certainly seen my fair share of thematic ETFs. I think in 2021, 22, they were super popular. And I'd also love for you to talk about some of the considerations that go into launching a new product, right? Maybe talk us through the entire life cycle from conceptualizing and execution to maybe monitoring.
Sure. It is, it's actually very easy to launch an ETF in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so this is why you've seen so many ETFs come to market, so many providers come to market. I think the barriers to entry are low and the barriers to success are very high. And so you have a lot of ETFs in the Canadian market with very little traction because it's so easy for, you know, a small boutique asset manager to say, oh, I might as well throw my hat in the ring and launch an ETF and see if anybody's going to bite. But, you know, it's not like it's being backed by a lot of sales support or a lot of marketing effort behind it. So it's very easy to launch an ETF. There are, of course, fixed costs associated with launching an ETF, like launching a mutual fund. There are regulatory related costs. You need to have a prospectus filed. You have to be yourself a licensed fund manager by the OSC to be able to do this. You need to have portfolio managers on staff who can manage the product. And then you need to have at least a base level of operational setup within your firm to be able to run an ETF. And so there are base costs, right, associated with launching a product, and then ongoing costs to keep that product alive. You've got audit costs, you've got regulatory costs or legal costs on an annual basis that you have to pay for, other than keeping the lights on and keeping your staff employed and paid, right? So that's sort of your minimum. And then when you come to market, how do you attract the attention of investors? You know, is the idea hot enough that you can have investors just flock to it? And we've seen some products launch in the past few years that have seen a lot of engagement from the direct channels, a lot of do-it-yourself investors finding products because they're looking for that specific investment opportunity. And so some products have been quite successful at gathering assets by just being there at the right time, right? And people are looking for it. But those are far and few, right? And to hit that lottery, I'll call it, because it does feel a little bit like it's luck, is not often. And it might be short-lived too, right? If it is a theme. And oftentimes that's what a DIYer is looking for a product for. It's like, I want it now. And there's a play here and it might be temporary and I want the pickup and I might be selling this ETF in like a few weeks or a few months. You can attract investors that way. You've got to have time in an advisor's office or time in front of individual investors to be able to help them better understand what you're delivering. What is your value add versus a competitor's value? Why buy your ETF and not someone else's? And so that takes having an effective marketing campaign. You need a website. You need to have enough thought leadership, perhaps collateral marketing pieces to help investors better understand what you do. And you might actually, like I said, need more face time, whether it's, you know, investor forums, podcasts, other marketing efforts that you can use to be able to just get in front of the right people. And then, of course, you know, how much time are you spending at advisors' offices across the country who are making decisions on behalf of their clients? So there's a lot of this sort of ongoing work we do with our sales team, our marketing team, to be able to sell and position our product. We produce a lot of thought leadership on the product team. That's a part of my job that I get really excited about, is thinking about different ways that I can help investors better navigate the investing environment through ETFs and, you know, help them better understand different types of products, structure of products, taxable outcomes. And so we produce a lot of thought leadership that then ultimately ends up in the advisor's office through our sales team. And like I said, on an ongoing basis, we monitor how well our products are doing. And it's not just about absolute performance, right? We want to think about relative to market conditions, to peers in the group. How is our product strategy doing? Is it delivering its intended outcome for investors, or has it fallen short? And if it has, what should we be doing about it? Do we need to make changes to the mandate? Do we keep monitoring it? And so we spend a lot of time. It's not just about launching the ETF and off we go, but we spend a lot of time after a product launches on an ongoing basis to ensure that we are ultimately delivering to investors what we've said we were going to do. Right? And if we're not, how do we continue to evolve that? So it's interesting, in the past decade, you've seen the ETF industry mature more. And so you're seeing more closures of ETFs, more mergers of ETFs. And that's not a bad thing, right? We've seen this influx of new ETFs come to market. And for a long time, it was just products launching and nothing closing. And now we're seeing more of that rationalization happening, because we should all be asking ourselves as product providers, are we doing what's best for clients? And if not, we should take those products off the market so that you're not leading clients to the wrong solutions. And so, you know, I think you're going to continue to see more and more shelf rationalization across different providers. And it's a cost narrative too, right? Keeping an ETF open is expensive. Like I said, there's ongoing costs. And so, you know, if you know it's not the right mandate for investors and there's a cost associated with it, at some point, you do the right thing and you say, we're going to close this or merge it away and offer something better for investors to meet their needs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love to double tap on the going to market motion. You've mentioned, right, marketing is a huge part of it. It's almost embedded within the design of your products. And so I'm wondering, when you're designing new products or conceptualizing, do you have in mind already who the customer base is or will be? Or do you just design a product and then go to market and see who bites?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, right? So there's certainly, you know, we try to stay as attuned to advisor and investor needs as we can. And there's a few different forms for that. The most obvious one is that we're in their offices regularly through our sales team. And so having a healthy amount of feedback is very important back and forth from that advisor's office. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are your pain points? What are you thinking about going into 2024, 2025? What are your challenges? And so we're having that discussion on an ongoing basis in their office, because we're there to help them solve problems. We're there to be partners to them. And it's not just about what's on our shelf, but it's also to say what isn't on our shelf, or maybe what is on our shelf and you don't like it and why you don't like it. And so, you know, we get constant feedback from our sales team, which helps in our product development and product management process. We also try to be a little bit more forward-looking and try to play in white space. There is still a lot of white space in ETF investing in the country. And so, you know, is the advisor investor always going to know where the puck is moving? No, they're looking to investment experts to figure that out. And so we spend a lot of time looking at other geographies. So what are global trends? We think about market conditions. We think about product solutions and structuring. And so there, you know, it's this healthy balance, at least at McKenzie for us, where, you know, we try to sort of meet the needs that are unmet and that we know of, but also try to identify opportunities that perhaps are white space and advisors don't even know what they need, you know, tomorrow or the day after. Can we be there? Can we meet them there? I'll give you an example. We were the first in the country to launch a China A-shares ETF several years ago. China as a standalone allocation, there's been a lot of debate globally about, you know, whether we should be considering emerging markets and then China as a separate allocation from that, just given the continued growth opportunity in that market. And many are saying India might become that from a discussion standpoint as well. And so as it relates to China, we were the first in the country to say, yeah, advisors should be exploring a separate allocation to China. And it shouldn't just be in a basket of EM countries where you've got 20 plus countries who may have very different recovery rates, even through, you know, times like the pandemic or any kind of global crises. You've got such a range of EM countries that they aren't always going to behave the same way. They are often correlated on the down, right? When everything's down, everything's down. But on the recovery, on the up, growth trends are very different across different EM markets. So that would be an example of, you know, where we've tried to be more forward looking and offer you know, investors the opportunity to explore something they haven't traditionally explored. Another example on our shelf, and this is actually not revolutionary. It's just not, it wasn't on offer in the Canadian market when we launched it. But we launched Canada's first Treasury Inflation Protected Securities ETF to be able to invest in TIPS from the US government. Prior to the launch of our product, you could buy a US-listed ETF, which doesn't have great tax outcomes for Canadian investors, or you could buy TIPS bonds directly, which is also expensive and harder to really buy and own in your portfolio. So an ETF is the easiest thing, usually very low cost. And there wasn't a single vehicle in Canada or a single product in ETFs, I should say, available in Canada to do that. And so not revolutionary, just a product that would have been, you know, needed at some point by advisors. And sure enough, 6 months later, the pandemic hit, right? And you had a lot of money flow into TIPS at that point. And so, you know, did we see that coming? Obviously not. But what we saw was a longer term opportunity for TIPS in a client's portfolio. At some point, advisors or investors would need TIPS, we felt, from a fixed income standpoint. So it's sort of saying, okay, we don't see it necessarily a market today, but we know that there is need and demand at some point for this kind of a solution. So should we be coming to market with it now? So we're there when the client wants it, right? So just some examples of how you can kind of try to use your own intellect, your perspective, your thought leadership to find those opportunities to deliver to clients. It's no different than an active manager looking at opportunities to areas to invest in, companies to invest in. What value can they deliver to clients through an active portfolio? Similar to a hedge fund manager. It's the same thing ultimately, right? Like our goal is to deliver that investment expertise. And part of that is trying to find those, uncover those unique opportunities as well.
Yeah, that's great perspective. You've mentioned the demarcation of geography in your products and the TIPS. Those are all innovations. Are there any other interesting trends or innovations that you see in the space where McKenzie is a leader in today?
Yeah, we continue to spend a lot of time thinking about ESG. And, you know, there's been a lot of debate, particularly in the US, about ESG for various political reasons. Europe has, for many years, been much further along that path, even from a regulatory perspective and ensuring, you know, investors like institutional investors, pension plans, have a requirement to invest in a sustainable manner. We're seeing that trends continue to bear in the Canadian market and investors continuing to look for those kinds of mandates. And we've been first to market with many types of strategies in that area. Last year, we launched an ETF with a firm called Corporate Knights here based in Toronto. They're a research firm with 18 plus years of experience in looking at different ESG research. And so they publish a Global 100 list every year of companies that have met 25 KPIs from an ESG perspective. And so we thought, well, how do we bring that research to market? You can't actually invest in an easy way in those 100 companies. So wouldn't that be unique that we can, you know, actually bring that to market and be able to have investors invest in those 100 companies that they've identified based on their research? So we launched that ETF last year, really leaning on industry experts like Corporate Knights and acknowledging all of the great research work they do and say, you know, how do we bring that to market in an investable solution? So that was a very unique undertaking for us. And just generally, you know, we're spending a lot of time thinking about ultimately the outcome investors are getting, even from the most vanilla of exposures. So when we launched our passive ETF suite, you know, one can say, well, there's not much innovation you can do in passive. But I've spent a lot of time in passive over the last decade. And there were many enhancements that we made to our product offerings that you can see, in fact, in performance today versus the usual S&P 500 or S&P TSX tracking ETFs. Some of them are tax related. Some of them are rebalancing timing related. But it is looking at even the most vanilla of solutions and saying, is it doing the best that it can do? Or are there rules, for example, even in an index methodology that prohibit this ETF potentially from delivering the best that it can deliver? So I've always been of the mindset, don't assume that just because it was built and works, that it is the best that it can be for investors, right? And so you're seeing a lot more people asking those kinds of questions and delivering better outcomes as a result for clients. And then we all win. We all have better solutions to invest in that can help us save for the long term.
Yeah, I'm super appreciative that you're delving into some of the specifics. And ETF certainly an eye-opener for me, and I'm sure for many young people out there as well listening. And I'd just love to use maybe our remaining time to ask you kind of your firsthand account of your career and your professional journey so far. Maybe if you could talk about what led you into this space in the first place, what were some important inflection points, stepping stones, and highlights?
Yeah, sure. I teased that a little bit in my first response, and I'll happily give you more insights to that. But I can tell you, when I graduated from university, I didn't know what an ETF was, let alone pursuing, you know, interested to pursue a career in ETFs. So, you know, at the time I was working with an advisor at an advisor's office supporting them. And it was just about the time of the global financial crisis. And having worked through it as my first real job, I was incredibly nervous about pursuing a career in asset management or wealth management, period. It was a very scary time to go through. And I stepped away. I quit my job because I didn't feel like that's something I wanted to pursue, was maybe becoming an advisor. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do next. So I spent some time working with some startups. And, you know, at the end of 2009, realized, okay, maybe it's time for me to get back into the investment world. I don't know where and I don't know how. And so I leaned on some of my mentors at the time, one of whom got me a meeting at RBC Global Asset Management. And I went in not knowing what I wanted to do, but I just wanted to continue to learn. And I ended up working or joining the institutional team at RBC Global Asset Management. So I supported a lot of individuals who worked with pension plans and endowments and foundations and managed money for them. And I learned all about the institutional investment world there. And I also had my first taste of product development working in that job and supporting some of the institutional product development happening. I got to a point there where I felt like I had learned as much as I could, and I wanted to continue to pursue or further my career, I should say, and I wasn't really seeing any immediate opportunities. So I started looking around the bank and looking elsewhere and trying to figure out what I did next. And I applied for a job at Vanguard, and I didn't know the job, like I didn't know what the job meant. I looked at the job title and I looked at the description of the job. I understood two of the 10 things, and the other eight, I didn't even understand, let alone know how to do. And so, you know, I 3 months later ended up at Vanguard and had held a variety of roles while I was there. I was one of their first few employees here on the ground in Canada, helping build their Canadian product lineup, and learned a lot in that role. Everything I know about ETFs, I really got to learn there, and I learned from a lot of very smart people globally, including at head office. And so a few years later, Mackenzie came looking. They wanted to build out their ETF business. And I joined here when assets were just about 150 million. We're just under 12 billion today, just about 12 billion today. So so that was 7 years ago or so my journey here at Mackenzie so far, but I would never have thought this is the job I would have when I first came out of school or even early in my career. And I've always been of the mindset that as long as you're learning and growing, you'll get where you want to be, and just be open to opportunity and never say never and don't say no, explore new things and, you know, try to put your all into it on an ongoing basis. But, you know, don't assume things are just going to show up in your way. You've got to work hard for it, and you've got to put up your hand when those opportunities come and take risks in your career, because if you don't, it's going to be harder to get where you want to be. And so you've got to take risks in your career to sometimes get you where you need to be.
Yeah, that's a great note to end our conversation on. And I'm certainly super appreciative of this conversation. Like, this was so insightful. And thank you again, Pranav, for taking the time.
Thank you. It's been great to chat with you.